Right. Now, while we begin, just to, for purposes of clarification, the Pan American Health Organization, or PAHO, is actually the oldest public health institution in the world, if one is to really call it what it is. It was formed in 1902. And arising out of the experiences of the Pan American Health Organization, there was the global formation of the World Health Organization in 1948. So PAHO was actually now serves as the office of the Americas for the World Health Organization, but in fact, the child actually gave birth to the parent. Now, we can chat a little bit about non-communicable diseases and mental health, and there are some areas which of overlap between some of what you were told by Lynn, but that's not a bad thing for reinforcement. I have no disclosures. Now, the four major non-communicable diseases, as agreed at the global level, are cardiovascular disease, cancers, diabetes, and chronic respiratory disorders. The main risk factors that underpin these diseases are the use of tobacco, as you've heard before, unsafe use of alcohol, unhealthy diets, and physical inactivity. In addition to this burden, there's also the concomitant burden of mental disorders. And you may not be aware that as many as 40 to 60% of people who have non-communicable diseases also have associated mental health disorders, particularly depression. You also have the challenge of disabilities as complications of some non-communicable diseases and the need for rehabilitation. Global mortality. Around 2011, the estimates were that there were approximately 56 million deaths. Of these, approximately 38 million resulted from non-communicable diseases. I'm going to draw your attention to that the red bar in the middle, and that basically states that there are about 13, nearly 14 million deaths occurring in persons aged 30 to 69, the so-called premature mortality due to non-communicable diseases. And in fact, these deaths we consider to be eminently preventable by and large. And I think that is quite a lot of what our focus is at the global level in terms of rolling back the burden of disease. If one imagines premature death, someone who's still in the age range where they can contribute usefully to economic activity in the community, people who are supporting families, people who still have a lot to contribute, quite a large number of these people are dying prematurely because of the burden of non-communicable diseases. And therefore, targets are aimed at trying to roll back and reduce this burden of avoidable premature mortality. As Lynn said, the figures here, but I'm presenting figures from 2010 in the Americas, where NCDs are responsible for 83% of all deaths in this region. The upper part of the graphic shows the mortality distribution among women, lower part among men. And I think there are two points I'm going to draw your attention to. One is that the burden of mortality from NCDs is almost consistently higher among women than men. And secondly, the burden of NCDs and NCD-related mortality is actually highest in North America, Canada, United States of America, and closely followed by Mexico regards women. You may ask why, and the question might be answered in terms of competing mortality. In the lower part of the graphic, you will see that the orange part of the graphic is wider. Men are more likely to kill themselves or shoot themselves and other such activities. So it's competing mortality. NCD risk factors and disease burden in the Americas. Now, why is the burden of mortality so high in the Americas? And the answer resides in these facts. There are nearly 150 million smokers in our region. Up to 30% of adults have elevated blood pressure. And 25% of persons overall aged 15 years and older are obese. And this leads to 200 million people in this region of the Americas living with at least one non-communicable disease. As I said before, there's a tremendous burden of premature mortality. It's as high as 36% in this region. And overall death due to non-communicable diseases was 4 million in 2011. Our more recent estimates of 2014 put this number at about 4.5 million. The major cause of premature death due to NCDs is cardiovascular disease. It accounts for almost 50% of deaths. Cancer accounts for about 30%. Chronic respiratory disease for about 10%. Whereas diabetes accounts for 8% and others for the remaining proportion of deaths. This again speaks to a topic that Lynn introduced, losses due to non-communicable diseases. David Bloom and his group at Harvard tried to project what is the economic loss due to NCDs. And they projected that between 2011 and 2030, there would be a loss of $47 trillion as a direct consequence of NCDs if nothing was done to reverse the projections. This graphic also shows that the degree of loss parallels the level of development. So the purple line at the very bottom is the level of loss seen in low-income countries. The green bar, the green line, shows losses due to in lower middle-income countries. Upper middle-income countries represented by the red line, and the high-income countries by the blue line. The top line, the orange-colored line, represents the global projection. So in other words, the higher level of development, this is directly linked to the level of loss. The charge of NCD management. NCDs are the primary cause of death in 80% of the population. However, half of the persons affected by an NCD, only half the persons affected are actually diagnosed. And of this number, only half of those who are diagnosed are actually treated. A quarter of those who receive care, of the quarter of those who receive care, only a half will actually achieve desired treatment goals. So overall, only 1 in 10 persons with an NCD is actually treated successfully. So there's a tremendous treatment gap for NCDs. And there are many things that we can do here. And in fact, I must say that a lot of the philosophy of international public health agencies has been aimed at prevention. And prevention is critical, as Lynn said. We tackle tobacco, alcohol, etc., we reduce the burden. But it's also a growing recognition that treatment is important. If we're able to treat effectively, we can reduce the mortality by 50%. And in fact, in North America, there have been the most significant reductions in NCD mortality have been achieved in Canada and the United States. That has largely been linked to improved treatment of cardiovascular conditions acutely. Regarding mental health disorders, there was a model where patients were treated in asylums instead of community-based services. So there actually are tremendously horrific stories. For example, in Brazil, there are actually documentaries of the genocide of patients who were managing asylums. And I've actually seen documentaries of starved, naked humans chained because that was the standard of care. And this was within the last 50 years or so. And the Pan American Health Organization has really embarked on moving the model from an asylum-based model to treatment in the community. And so we actually advocate the elimination and the shift from the mental health asylum model to care in the community where people live and exist with their families. Additionally, rehabilitation services are limited. So what is effective care for non-communicable diseases? It means patient-centered care. It means care which is built into the primary healthcare system, where people can access care as they need without barriers. It is focused on the needs of populations. It's proactive and planned. Prevention, as we said before, as well as health promotion actions. Prevention must be focused on risk factors. And we also must stress the need for quality management for those who are affected. But this is at all levels of the healthcare system where care is needed. Because there are people who you need to develop a strategy of prevention. So you must ensure that the young people never start to smoke. But for those who have diseases, you must ensure that they receive quality care, reduce the burden of complications, and a shortening of life expectancy. So as I said here, as we said before, The issues of tobacco consumption, health use of alcohol, unhealthy diets, and lack of physical activity. And these all link in then to the key non-communicable disorders. Your mother says to you, and mothers know best, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So, as we said before, prevention limits or delays the amount of health conditions. If you prevent people becoming ill, there are downstream benefits. You save in terms of costly medicines, therapies, and technologies. Primary prevention of risk factors can also provide an overarching framework for the sustainability of universal health coverage and universal access to care. And my colleague James can talk to you a lot more about what this means. So primary prevention through policies, as you said before, that regulate tobacco, alcohol, food and sugar beverages, as well as urban planning to promote physical activity are key interventions. And as Lynn said, they can then through many ways, through promotion, through education, through legislation, and of course, regulation. And we've been very reluctant to use the tool of regulation. What I will say is quite often, many of the manufacturers will try to make the case for voluntary regulation. What happens in reality is this often used as a delaying tactic, because you can keep shifting the playing field, never achieve the targets, whereas when the state says there will be a consequence to unhealthy practices, and we will regulate it, or we will tax you, or we will legislate against it, for example, against advertising tobacco to minors. And once that is taken up, we see the immediate benefits to those interventions. We said a little bit before about cost-effective policies. These are the best bites. Tobacco, and these are proven things that work. Raising taxes, protecting people from tobacco smoke, warning about the dangers, and enforcing bans. And three of these strategies also work for alcohol. Reduction of salt has been a major gain in terms of reducing cardiovascular adverse outcomes through hypertension reduction. Trans fats do not occur normally in nature. We manufacture trans fats, and they're dangerous. We can do away with them totally by regulation. Counseling and multi-drug therapy. So in other words, for people at high risk of developing heart attacks and strokes, there are established treatments that reduce risk. As well as I said before, prompt management of people who have an acute myocardial infarction saves lives. That's led to most of the gains in North America. Additionally, hepatitis B immunization at birth prevents liver cancer, which may not be a big problem in North America, but is a preventable problem in other areas of the region and globally. And one of the other key things that works is screening and treatment of precancerous lesions to prevent cervical cancer. These diseases are actually quite common in much of the Latin American and Caribbean region, and they're eminently preventable through very simple strategies. You heard about this before? And the global target is a 25% reduction in premature mortality from the non-communicable diseases. And this, again, is a strategy that we're following at the global level. You heard a bit about the introduction of NCDs and the Sustainable Development Goals. One of the big, failings, if one looks through the retrospective scope of the Millennium Development Goals, was the view that the developing world does not have problems from non-communicable diseases. So NCDs were not included in the Millennium Development Goals. And in fact, the greatest level of mortality from NCDs actually arises in the developing world. So therefore, we are quite heartened to see now that NCDs are included in the Sustainable Development Goals. And in fact, the target is that by 2030, we should reduce by one-third premature mortality from NCDs. It also captures strategies to tackle harmful use of alcohol, tobacco, as well as supporting research and development of vaccines and medicines for communicable diseases as well as for NCDs. And of course, the goal is to get universal health coverage. Multisectoral coordination is critical because many of the risk factors and what drives the NCD epidemic occurs beyond the health sector. So therefore, many sectors of government promote different policies which are not always aligned. And we see this, for example, with tobacco. The health minister will say reduce tobacco consumption because it will save lives. The finance minister might say, no, we want more people to smoke because it brings greater taxes into the treasury. And quite often, they are not aligned in terms of the philosophy. We try to see a great alignment. And this is also part of what we need to achieve through regulatory frameworks. Health and all policies requires all sectors to work together to benefit health. Community participation is critical. And we also have to preach the message that public health interests need to supersede commercial gains. Quite often, when you get the ministers of health and other departments to agree about relevant strategies and interventions, you find that the big manufacturers will do everything they can to roll it back. And there was a recent example in Mexico, where there's a successful imposition of a tax on sugar-sweetened beverages. And just within the last 2 weeks, you may be well aware that the House of Deputies attempted to lower the tax and to remove the tax from some drinks with a lower quantity of sugar. And you can be quite sure that many of us were involved in a fight to encourage the Senate not to do such. And we are quite heartened when the Senate of Mexico agreed not to reduce the tax. And in fact, the sense is the tax should actually be doubled to have maximum benefit. There's particular tools that we have. And in fact, James might talk a little bit more about the strategic fund, which is a mechanism we have to procure essential medicines and technologies for the countries of the Americas. And in fact, what we do is we do it by bulk procurement, which reduces the cost and makes the medications more available and accessible. We promote the concept of chronic care with self-involvement of persons affected, also promoting mental health services and primary health care, and integrating mental health interventions into primary health care, moving away from the model of the asylum. We also have a program of education through the virtual campus to strengthen human resources for health. As I said before, improving regulatory capacity and stewardship of governments to implement policies and risk factors is also a key aspect of our stewardship. Thanks for your attention.